The opera is grand, beautiful, and of course, dramatic. And so are the costumes that help tell those classic stories. Designing those costumes for an opera is an exercise in historical research, pattern making, and artistic license. And for Arizona Opera costume designer Kathleen Trott, it's a creative endeavor. I recently got to go behind the scenes in her costume shop at the Arizona Opera to see how it all works and was met by what looks like a craft room filled with racks of grand dresses, piles of dress forms, colorful materials, and rows of sewing machines. Today, they're making a probably 10-foot-long dragon puppet for an upcoming educational production of The Magic Flute that will travel throughout the state, as well as a medieval-looking hat for one of the characters.
So this is Papagena's hat. The idea was that Papageno and Papagena were sort of gently chicken-themed. So we took historically accurately shaped hats. So this is a hat that's similar to a medieval hat. It will end up ultimately looking like an exaggerated Robin Hood hat. And then we're going to crumple it down when it's real fabric and sew it so that these crumples end up looking like the little combs on the head of a chicken. So it's still a medieval hat, but it looks a little bit like a chicken.
Okay, so we're pinning this now. This is the pattern.
So these are the patterns. So Lauren has pinned it all out. She's made sure that her grain is correct. And then she's going to mark where she's gonna cut. And she will cut it out and then we can sew it together.
Trott grew up in the theater, but she says it wasn't always obvious to her that she would end up working in the theater. I sat down with her in the costume shop and talked more about what led her to this role and how she approaches designing for the grand opera stage, like she did last year for the Arizona Opera's original production of Riders of the Purple Sage, which was adapted from Zane Grey's famous Western novel.
It's one of those things where in high school, everyone was always like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I didn't know because I wasn't excellent at any one specific thing. I was good at lots of things, and so it made it really hard to narrow it down. But theater, being good at lots of things, makes you excel here because you have to be able to problem solve, and you have to be able to research, and you have to have an artist's eye, and you have to be able to work really well with others and be flexible about your decisions, and you have to enjoy being part of a greater sum than yourself, because the art that we make in theater is much bigger than what any one person could ever make, and it's a separate thing. So if my costumes look beautiful, but they look awful in front of the set, I haven't succeeded. And it doesn't matter that up close they're gorgeous dresses, because they're not serving the purpose of the play. So that's part of the thing that I like about theater, is that it's very give and take. So I have to make something that works with other artists as well.
So let's talk about your role here and about what it means to design costumes for the opera in particular. So for a show like Zane Grey's novel that you adapted, you get the script eventually, I'm sure. You listen to the music, you talk to the director. Where do you approach the costume making? Do you start with the time period?
For that sort of show, yes, because it was set in a time period and it was very specific. And I got the libretto and the music as it was being made. So I saw it earlier in the process and could sort of progress, and I could look at the notes and be like, oh, this is kind of grand sounding, so my costumes can't be small and tiny because then they'll be drowned by Edmel's beautiful set and by this epic movement that's happening in the music. If my costumes are all flat and tiny, then it won't match, and it would be very disconnected on a sort of subconscious level for the audience. They would be like, I don't really know why I didn't like that scene. Often they can't tell, but there's something that doesn't ring correct for them. And that's often actually one of the things that makes people not like a movie or like a movie. You don't know why those costumes were weird, and it's because they were completely historically inaccurate.
So it has to do with the authenticity of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So it was really important for Fenlon Lamb, who was the director for Riders of the Purple Sage, that it feel real on one hand, especially because our set was so sort of grand, and Ed Mel's style is really true to what you see, but it also is beautifully stylized. And so she really wanted the costumes. They needed to be real people who lived in front of this beautifully epic scenery. Then when we decided that, I went to the historical source material. So costume sketches, they have all these fashion plates that were done in the 1900s and in the 1800s before we had a whole bunch of photography and things like that. And so we looked at those. And so we started looking at shapes and silhouettes and movement. As a group, we went out to the desert where this show actually takes place. We got to take a really great trip out to Pipe Springs National Monument, which is believed to be the basis for Jane's house in the novel. And while we were out there, we were talking about the fact that, you know, in Zane Grey's novel, Jane's house is filled with women from town who work, who help her, because she's running a whole ranch and you can't run a ranch with just one person. So what I decided I wanted to do was express the fact that as the story goes on, the women and the minority in that town get more and more oppressed. So they lose some of their individuality. And so the women start out having a little bit more color in their palette, and they have more trim, and their shapes are a little bit more individual, still within the time period, but distinct. And then as the show goes, they change costumes, and they become dark and drab, and they look very similar. And you can't really tell the difference between one or the other in the back of the stage as it's dark when the scene is happening, because they're no longer individual humans. They've been sort of suppressed down.
So that's part of it too, though, right? Like the fact that these are not, they're historically accurate, but these are not costumes like for a movie. These are costumes you're gonna see from far away. How do you costume for that? How do you design for that?
So because our stage is bigger than a movie, it means that often our choices have to be heightened. So in a movie, a dress that has a little tiny pinstripe would have a little petite trim and it would be lovely and you'd see it and it would be great. But that little pinstripe and that little trim will get lost on our big stage under the really high wattage lights that we use. So our trim tends to be slightly bigger than what the normal trim is. And it gets to be a little bit contrast. So it's a brighter white than it would have been because the cream would have washed out, or there's a little strip of color in with it.
So listening to you talk about this is so interesting, mainly because I think it's so much of what you're saying is about the unconscious half of this. Like, you're not the singer on stage. You're not the principal cast member, even the director, even somebody making the sets, right? This is the stuff that, like, literally is on the people who are telling the story. What is it about the costumes that you think makes such a difference to the audience, even though they may not always realize it?
So part of what I like about making costumes as opposed to the set is that costumes are very close to our hearts. We may not realize it, but when you go to your closet in the morning, there is a reason why you put on the thing that you put on. Clothes say so much about who you are, even if you're not trying to make them say anything. The thing that has to ring true with an opera or with a play is that the job of what we do is to bring fictional people and circumstances to life as if they were real. And so that means that in order for those characters to be real, they then would have had to have gone to their imaginary closet and stared at the options available to them and decided what to wear on that day. Today, they have to look really great because whoever's coming over and they're trying to impress them, what's their best suit to pull out of their closet? Or we, being the designers, know that something really tragic is going to befall this person. So in order to heighten the tragedy, we need to make them be presented as hopeful and young and innocent to begin with, so that when it's all stripped away, we can see on their outside the difference, because that's what happens to real people. So like with Riders of the Purple Sage, part of what we were trying to tell on a more quiet level was that when men abuse a governmental or religious structure for their own gain, it's not true to what it was originally set up for, and it hurts all of the small members, small being minority, not actually worth less, of a community, which we felt was very poignant and still continues to be so in this day and age.
When I was a much younger man, and I loved her more than any woman I ever knew.
And often what makes people, I think, really love opera is that we tend to get to see the really tragic outcome of it. So we can have that catharsis. And the films that win awards and the books that we love and the music that we really love all does that on some level too. It touches us, and every time we come back to it, we take something different and new out of it, and it connects us all.
Kathleen Trott, thank you so much.
You're welcome.